Do design decisions involve value judgments? Andy Halliwell has gone and posted this question on LinkedIn as part of our redesigning D&T project and debates. I think this is a really tricky one to answer, and our expert group felt that it was an important question that needed debating. Do design decisions involve value judgments? I think firstly, I'd be saying, what do you mean by a value judgment, a values judgment? And maybe in your response to Andy's question, you'll explore what you understand and what your views are of what value judgments are, and then whether they actually impinge on or affect the design decisions that designers make and also that children make in D&T lessons. So do join the debate. We're always open to conversation and discussion on this. But for now, on to the next episode. You're listening to the Talking D&T podcast. I'm Dr. Alison Hardy, a writer, researcher, and advocate of design and technology education. In each episode, I share views, news, and opinions about D&T. This week's episode is part of the Shaping D&T series that I'm publishing between April 2024 and August. I've got a whole series of different people coming on to talk about their thoughts about what needs to be shaped, why it needs to be shaped, and what could be done and what should be done. But I thought it'd be useful to just take stock about what has been going on and what is the current situation in terms of the curriculum for design and technology in England at the moment. There will, throughout this series, be people coming on from different parts of the globe to talk about what design and technology education in its many different guises and different names looks like in different parts of the world. But this is really focusing on what's happening in England. So I make no apologies for that, but some people might find this interesting, even if you're not teaching in England. So in England, there is a national curriculum, and I'll put a link in the show notes for those of you who aren't familiar with that. It is the seventh iteration, I think, of the national curriculum. I've written about this previously and talked about it in previous episodes about the history of D&T, but it has evolved over time. Now, this is the current national curriculum, which was 2013-2014, has actually been the longest one that we've had in existence that's been undisturbed or tinkered with or altered. I think, you know, we've gone from 1990 to 94 to 97 to 2000, 2004, 2007 to 2013-14. So, you know, this is 10 years this one has lasted. I'm just going to have to apologise. Kip has decided that he wants to join in with this episode, so he's going to come and sit on my knee for a moment. So I'll just turn away from the microphone. Just going to sit there quietly, aren't you? And so I think that says an awful lot about the fact that the government who is currently in power in England, that's the Conservatives, we're expecting a general election later this year, have stayed true to their ideology about curriculum, and they have said that they were not going to alter the curriculum while they were in power. They have a particular ideology and they have maintained that. Whether we agree with it or not is for another debate, but that is what they've done. And they brought this new curriculum in after a review in 2011, where they brought together an expert panel. Now, we can all debate whether they were experts or not, but it was chaired by Tim Oates, who I really do think is an expert around curriculum. And when I've spoken to him briefly, he's a passionate advocate for design and technology. But in that review, they were asked to think about what was the best that has been thought and said about what should be taught as a result of that. And they were very much coming from an Edie Hirsch and Daniel Willingham perspective. They're two education philosophers, leading researchers in America, who've had quite a lot of sway over who was then the schools minister, Nick Gibb, and Michael Gove. So the expert panel reviewed the national curriculum, kind of with those parameters to look at. And they came out with a review in 2011 that said that I'm just going to focus mainly on design and technology. Obviously, I could talk about the whole curriculum. That design and technology didn't have a clear epistemology. So it's knowledge structure, it's where knowledge came from, how it was formed, how we identify whether something is true or not, is contested, and there's no clear way, whereas they would argue that in history and other subjects that there was a clear epistemology. So what their argument was is, if there's no clear epistemology, then it hasn't got a strong foundation. If it hasn't got a strong foundation, then it's difficult to determine what is the best of what has been thought and said. And I've written extensively about this in other places, and I'll put some links in the show notes to do with this. Now, that caused, so the outcome was, of that was that their design and technology would therefore be part of what is known, they called it a basic curriculum. So it would be determined locally. It would be determined who would teach it, what would be taught, and who would study it. Now, that, you know, it was a review. It wasn't a white paper that was going out for consultation. So it meant that people could respond and critique. And there was quite an outcry, as you can imagine, from the design and technology community. So what we did, a number of us were then pulled together to create, well, to respond to that. Sorry, I'm kind of missing a whole thing out here. I'm slightly distracted by Kip wriggling around on my knee. I do apologise. Let me get the time order. So I've got the review. Basic curriculum. Weak epistemology. Outcry. Eddie Norman and Ken Baines put a book out, Design Epistemology. I wrote a chapter for that. David Spendlove, who's coming on the podcast later, you know, really spoke out very vehemently about this, as did many others. And then what happened is a new national curriculum for all school subjects was created. But the one for design and technology had, as far as we can gather, no external consultation. It was just created. And it was shockingly bad. It's kind of quite difficult to find it online now, but it was really bad. It was written by somebody who had no understanding of the subject. And then as a result, a group of us were pulled together. About 40 of us, I think, came together by invitation to the Royal Academy of Engineers. And during the course of a day, and there'd been some preliminary work and there was some work afterwards, this current national curriculum was, or a draft version was put forward that then had to go to the then schools minister, Liz Truss. And if you're in England, that name might send shivers down your spine after she was prime minister in England, in Great Britain for a while. Well, not for a while at all. But anyway, I am rambling here. Sorry. I'm trying to kind of put all these pieces together that people can understand how we are in this situation in terms of the curriculum, that these things don't just appear, they evolve and they demonstrate what people think of the subject. So this current version was created by a committee, one might argue, in a building that was the Royal Academy of Engineers, which has a particular remit. Obviously, it's about engineering, but it is a Royal Society. So it has more power and authority than some other groups that might not have that status. So it was good to have them on board as an advocate, but then obviously there are tensions within that around what the subject is. So draft curriculum put forward to Liz Truss, big tensions around food, and around where it should sit. Previously, it had been a material that was completely embedded in design and technology. Again, there's a whole history around that, which I talk about in a previous episode. And this time it was decided to put it as a kind of a sub-subject, one might say, within the national curriculum, which caused confusion, lack of clarity for all sorts of people. I think all subjects have a tension around their vocational tension, preparing people to do jobs in that sector, enabling children to live a flourishing life, so to live independently, autonomously, so we can see where food sits along that. And, you know, design and technology has had those tensions. The utilitarian value, let's say. So we've got the vocational leading to jobs. Food does that, design and technology, maths, science. The utilitarian, we can see how math, science, English, design and technology and food do that. And then we've got this other section, which is about what contribution does a subject make to a child's general education that is unique. And that's where the subject's epistemology comes in. What is makes it unique and essential, the best of what has been thought and said. And I think that's the general. So we've got vocational, utilitarian and general. And what was going on nationally around food, politically, was around the utilitarian and the obesity crisis. And there's a chapter in the debates book, Does Food Fit?, where they give some of this history around it and some of these tensions. It's worth a read of that chapter. So there, that led to food being kind of pulled out into this sort of subgroup. And I'm kind of using that word sub in a very wince-worthy way, because I am not saying that cooking and nutrition is a sub, but it didn't seem to have its own distinction. And also it was taking away from the fact that food had been in many schools a very clear material for children to use as part of design and design development, as part of a general education. So there's all these tensions around how the national curriculum is structured, where it was done, Royal Academy of Engineers, who was around the table, who'd been invited, who wasn't invited, where food as a material sat and food as a subject. And again, if you've got politics, policy, people with their own agendas having a stake in that, then that affects how that then comes into being in the national curriculum. I think that's how we've got to this place that we have, in terms of we've got a design and technology curriculum with this sub-subject. Again, I'm using sub, you know, it's almost a subject embedded within, but not, it's discrete. So that makes it very confusing for people, I think, who don't understand the nature of design and technology. So that's where we've got to in terms of, if you look at the document for the national curriculum. There was debate when the national curriculum as a whole was reviewed about whether there should be aims for a subject. I wrote quite strongly that I think there should be aims. There's lots of tension around that. The national curriculum review was influenced quite heavily by Professor Michael Young, who talks about epistemology. He's kind of comes from the Basil Bernstein, if you're interested in research, school of thinking about the structure of subjects and strong boundaries and weak boundaries. Design technology, they claim, have weak boundaries. Michael Young is not an advocate of an aims-based curriculum. His counterparts at UCL, University College London, Michael Rees and John White, I think I'm getting my names wrong, are very strong advocates for an aims-led curriculum. So there's all sorts of debate about whether education should be aims-based or not. And at that point, Michael Young and his work, and it is really good work. I mean, I'm not, you know, saying either of these arguments are better or worse, but they give a different perspective. And they have had at that point different leverage in terms of policy. And Michael Young's work around knowledge sat very, could be aligned to E.D. Hirsch and Daniel Willingham, who I mentioned earlier in the podcast. So there was a debate, do we have an aims-based curriculum? And I think if you look at the GCSE specification, there are no aims anymore. I think personally, that's a real loss, because then we don't understand the grounding of the subject. You know, what is the purpose of this GCSE? What is it doing? You know, what's the aim? What are the young people going to walk out of if they kind of get the whole thing? What they're going to walk out as a complete person in design and technology. But they're not there in the GCSE, which I think is a real shame. But they are there in the national curriculum, and they are there for design and technology. They're there for every subject. And there are these purpose statements. On reflection, it's a bit of a hodgepodge. I was involved in the debate around the purpose of study for design and technology. I've critiqued it elsewhere, but there is a purpose. It's got a mention about math, science, engineering, computing and arts, because again, that was, and this is not to take the angle of that the subject is cross-disciplinary, there was a call from government, from Department for Education, that maths and science influenced and shaped subjects like design and technology. And also there was an argument around subjects being academic. And so one of the ways that design technology was enabled, argued to be put into that box, discussing academic and vocation as a whole other podcast episode, was to draw on maths and science, which again, I think kind of waters it down and leads to this idea about this weak epistemological blurred boundaries between design and technology and the subject. So it's there. Should it be there? What does that mean? I think it's difficult then sometimes to argue about the uniqueness of design and technology when even the purpose statement talks about drawing on other subjects. And there isn't a clarity about what we mean by this broad range of subject knowledge, which it talks about in the purpose. But there are four aims. They are there. And that's, I think, what the curriculum, when we're teaching it in schools, when it's being taught in schools, needs to drive what is being taught, why it's being taught. So those four aims are clearly there around developing creative, technical and practical expertise, perform everyday tasks confidently, to participate successfully in an increasingly technological world. Well, that's the first one. I think there's actually two in there. And I think that hints at the reason why design and technology is an important part of a general education. Designing and making high quality products, building and applying a repertoire of knowledge, understanding and skills in order to design and make high quality prototypes and products for a wide range of users. That's design and technology capability. Critique, evaluate and test their ideas and products and the work of others. Again, that's about, that links to me very much to that aim, the beginning. Creative, technical and practical expertise, perform everyday tasks, conflict, participate successfully. If you're going to participate successfully, I think in an increasing technological world, you have to be able to critique, evaluate and test. And understand and apply the principles of nutrition and learn how to cook. Again, there's two aims in there, but it's just written as one. So there are, from there, there's content listed for lower primary, key stage one, upper primary, key stage two, and lower secondary, key stage three, and then the same for cooking and nutrition. So that's where it's at. It's broken down in the design and technology section into design, make and evaluate and technical knowledge. Government directive was to keep it light, not to be too prescriptive. But then that kind of, if we don't hold on to the aims, if we don't articulate the aims, then it's very difficult to understand what knowledge we're selecting to teach. So I think that's where the national curriculum document sort of starts to struggle. It's the interpretation of it that is key in terms of the context to me of what the aims are of the subject. I keep coming back to that. The aims, the purpose. There are flaws in this document, but they are there to start thinking about what are we doing? Why are we selecting this knowledge now? Why are we teaching these skills, these procedures now and not later? What are we doing now that they're drawing on, that they've taught and that they've learned before? So this curriculum that's here, around design, make, evaluate, and technical knowledge. They aren't discrete. They are written as discrete. I'm going to talk in a later podcast about some of my views around the subject's knowledge structure. But it's presented here in the National Curriculum, design, make, evaluate, and technical knowledge as four discrete areas. And in cooking and nutrition, it's just under the three key stages, but about principles of healthy and varied diet, preparing and cooking, understanding ingredients and having a range of techniques. So the skill then is for a teacher is to take those aims and to take that knowledge and think about how and when they're teaching that knowledge in such a way that is building towards children achieving those aims. And those aims kind of grow over time. It's not like you can say, okay, well, we're going to do all of this, key stage one, key stage two, and bang, they're all going to suddenly appear at the end of key stage three. That's not how it is. But it's a real skill of a teacher to take all of that, to think, okay, it's an incremental, it's emerging over time. How are we doing that? How are we structuring teaching this knowledge? So I think understanding the origins of this current version, where it's come from, understanding some of the policy research drivers behind it coming to here, and then starting to think as a teacher what you need to think about in terms of how you plan that curriculum is really useful. But that's where we're at. It's been here for 10 years, this national curriculum. And there has been calls in the last year, since 2023 into 2024, that it's time for change. Whether that will happen with a change of government or a new government, as we go moving England to a general election later in the year, who knows? But that's where we're at the moment. And I still argue that I think we need to think about what is the knowledge structure, what are the aims of the subject, and holding on to those and demonstrating those through practice and research, that then means that when and if another curriculum comes in or is debated or there's a review, then we have a stronger assurance of the subject. I think that lack of assurance that had been articulated to policy directors, policymakers, meant that we actually went through this. We were blowing in the wind, and has led to some lack of clarity, I think, in the current national curriculum. But there is some clarity there, and I think there's plenty there to be building on. So I'm a great advocate of not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You know, if my chair doesn't fit, I don't necessarily get rid of it. I might just make a new cushion. I think in design and technology, it's about evolving the national curriculum rather than dramatically changing it, because we have to understand that the aims, the epistemology, the purpose of the subject remains consistent. We just might need to rearrange the furniture occasionally and put a new cushion in place, but to understand what the new knowledge is that's developing over time. So I'm kind of starting to hint there at some things that I might talk about in a future episode around the nature of the subject, where new knowledge comes from, how knowledge is structured in design and technology, and how we can think about that to plan curriculum. But for now, today was just a stock take on what the national curriculum is in England today, where it came from, how we need to hold our own, and thinking about the implications that's got and what might change in the future. And over the next few episodes, you're going to listen to different viewpoints about how people have responded to this national curriculum, what they've done with it, what they think needs to be changed, what could be changed, and what needs to be changed. Anyway, as ever, thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this week. It's been a bit of a ramble. Kip joined for me for a little bit and then he cleared off. Obviously, he didn't want to hear about the national curriculum anymore. But hope you found that interesting. Drop me an email. There'll be a follow-up episode on Thursday as well with some more insight and some more background and some links to some research in those show notes that's available for subscribers. I'm Dr. Alison Hardy and you've been listening to the Talking D&T podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, then do subscribe on whatever platform you use and do consider leaving a review, as it does help others find the podcast. I do the podcast because I want to support the D&T community in developing their practice, so please do share the podcast with your D&T community. If you want to respond to something I've talked about or have an idea for a future episode, then either leave me a voice memo via SpeakPipe or drop me an email. You can find details about me, the podcast, and how to connect with me on my website, dralisonhardy.com. Also, if you want to support the podcast financially, you can become a patron. Links to SpeakPipe, Patreon, and my website are in the show notes. Thanks for listening.